Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 366. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and we actually have a bit of breaking news to start today's podcast. The Los Angeles Dodgers have signed Chris Clegg to a long-term deal with most of the money deferred through the years 2029 through 2039. So, Chris, can you confirm or deny these rumors?
I'd gladly take deferred payments. I will more than happily take that. Yeah, I wouldn't be upset at all getting paid through 2039, which I don't really want to think about. That's, man, I'll be old. I don't want to think about that.
Yeah, I don't think about that either, because I'll be pushing 50 in the year 2039, so definitely don't want to think about that. But did you survive, like, the, you know, 12-hour or so TikTok ban? did you make it okay, Chris?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
We're all right.
It's really tough. I know some people, you know, do a lot more on there, and it was more, you know, big for them than it was for Chris and I. I have a TikTok that I barely ever use. So I don't really, it's definitely far down my social media totem pole, so to speak. But, you know, it's funny, like, seeing all people freak out about it. And then it's like, it was already back for, like, this afternoon. So, very short ban there.
Not long at all.
Nope. It's about as long as a TikTok or a Twitter outage or a Facebook outage or whatever that we've had over the last several months. But, all right, it is pitching week here. It's actually be pitching 2 weeks here. We got a lot of episodes about pitching here. We got two pitching prospect episodes and then two dynasty starting pitcher episodes with two phenomenal guests, and then relief pitcher dynasty to round it out. So those five episodes total will come out over the next 2 weeks. But we're starting with the tip top of our pitching prospect rankings today. But before we do, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at Chris Clegg, MILB. I am at Eric Cross, MLB. And the show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com, for more work from each of us. All of our Dynasty Prospect FYPD rankings are over there, and so much more. And you got to check out all the great content over on RotoBaller. Use that code TOOLSHED to get 10% off any premium package over at rotoballer.com. Ton more baseball content going up every single day. Draft kits coming out. It's a lot of fun stuff over there. A lot of great writers pumping out a lot of great content. So check all that out as well. All right, Chris, let's start off with our top 10. This would kind of be similar to the outfield where we did our top 20 in episode 1. So we'll do two segments, 1 through 10. And 11 through 20, and then next episode will be 21 through 50, and that'll be out on Wednesday, with a part one of Dynasty coming out on Friday. So that's the schedule for the week. So let's start off with our top 10 pitching prospects right now entering 2025. Chris, who you got?
All right, well, I may be accused of being hot takey here, but I had a few calls over the last week and about some players, and here we go. I recently made a tweaks, and I've got Bubba Chandler at the top. We can talk about that. About Bubba Chandler, Jackson Jobe, Andrew Painter, Chase Dolander, and Noah Schultz in the top five. For me, like, that's a clear-cut top five. I think you could argue maybe two tiers. I could argue two tiers there, but I think those are the five best pitching prospects in baseball, followed by Quinn Matthews, Thomas White, Kumar Rocker, Travis Sikora, and Brandon Sproat.
All right. For me, I have Andrew Painter at 1, Jackson Job 2, Noah Schultz 3, Bubba Chandler 4, Travis Sakura at 5, 6 through 10, Alejandro Rosario, Kumar Rocker, Quinn Matthews, Chase Dolander, and Cade Horton, who's a tough one to rank now. We'll get into him in a bit here at number 10. But let's go right to the top there because, yeah, it's funny. There is no, you know, kind of like we said on the hitting side, there's no, like, clear-cut number one right now. There's some, like, a small grouping. You know, you put anyone on number one, and, you know, I wouldn't frown at it. But, you know, you have Bubba Chandler at 1. I have Andrew Painter at 1. You know, Jackson Job, we both have at 2. A lot of people have him at number 1. And actually, I put out a poll from the Toolshed account a few days ago, kind of asking who people thought was the number 1 pitching prospect. And Job won that poll with nearly half the votes, 46.5% of the votes. Yeah. And then Andrew Painter had 33% of the votes. But yeah, no clear-cut number 1. But, you know, Chris, you know, people probably, you know, just kind of still taking in you having Bubba Chandler at 1. Because I think most people these days have Painter or Job. What made you put Bubba Chandler at number 1?
Well, I had Painter at 1. I've, at this point, seen all these guys. And so, like, why would I change it? Well, I've just been reviewing a little bit more with the pitch data, just talking to a few people. And, like, the most recent look of any of these guys was Andrew Painter. You know, we saw him in the AFL. Still obviously love Andrew Painter. I still think he's a top prospect in the game. But comparing, so I basically went through and just compared all of these guys and how they stacked up, and based on some feedback as well, you know, I actually think that Chase Dolander could take the top spot if it wasn't for Coors, and we'll get into him, I think, briefly. But here's where I landed above Chandler. Chandler has only gotten better throughout his career. Go back to high school, his draft year. I mean, we were talking about a 3-star quarterback, if I'm not mistaken, maybe 4, but he was committed to go to Clemson, who at the time was coming off some national championships. He's going to play quarterback, and he's going to be a 2-way baseball player. So not really focusing on pitching all that much. Steps into pro ball. The Pirates obviously draft him. He gets the overslot deal. He steps in, and his first year, he tries to do the 2-way thing. He's playing shortstop. He's pitching. Honestly, like, it just didn't go over well. Fast forward, I think that's then 2023 is his next year, where I did see him several times. And honestly, like, he got better throughout the year. Like, you saw the progression with Chandler just as a pitcher. On the mound, I mean, this is a freak athlete, no shock. Like, I mean, given that he was such a good football player, given the ability to play shortstop, like, Chandler is just an elite athlete and mover on the mound. He struggled with command at times. Actually, I've seen him probably at his worst. Like, I've shared the story before. I'm sitting with a scout from a pretty prominent team at a Chandler start, and it's the second or third time I've seen Chandler in 2023, and the scout had never actually seen him, so I was like, I'm just hyping him up. In the first inning, like, I shared the game log in the Dice Dugout Discord, but literally, it's like, it starts out okay, I think he, like, struck out the first batter, he allowed a hit, and then it went, like, walk, walk, wild pitch, walk. Like, it was ugly. It was like 30-some% strike rate. And after that half inning, the scout just kind of looked at me. And I was just like,
are you crazy, dude?
Yeah. And so it was a pretty dumbing moment. But, like, you know, I always think back to that. And it's like, you know, the process was always right. Like, I knew Chandler had elite stuff. Like, the TrackMan data was elite on it. I'd seen him pitch several times. And I think he threw 3 innings and it was better after that. But still, it was like one of those moments where it's like, okay, like, there's still a lot of growing pains here, and we saw him take that next step. We saw it in the spring. We saw it with Chandler this year. The strike rate just jumped significantly, and I think that he's so unique, like, in what he does. So stacking up the fastballs, like, I think Chandler's got the best fastball of this group outside of Dolander. Like, Dolander's fastball is probably better, but again, like, we'll talk him in a minute. But you look at Bubba Chandler's fastball, like, it sits around 97. It touches near triple digits. He throws it for strikes, like, much better than he did previously. Like, the strike rate on Chandler's fastball, really, really good. misses bats at a high clip. He's throwing from a 5'7" release height, and he's incredibly flat approach angle. So it's a negative 4.2 vertical approach angle, and he gets like 6'8" of extension on it. Absurd whiff rate. Like the whiff rate on his fastball last year, very high. The changeup's pretty devastating. You look at that pitch for Chandler. The pitch metrics on it are very strong as well. The slider, he kind of changed the slider shape a little bit. When I first saw him at the beginning of 2023 with Greensboro, he was throwing like more of a sweeper. And now it's more of a gyro slider, but I actually think that that pitch can play a little bit better. I mean, it sits 86, 87, changeup sits 88. So he's got those higher velo ranges, and he dumps in an 81-mile-an-hour curveball on you. It's just a pretty deep arsenal. Chandler checks the boxes from the athleticism standpoint. Now he's checking the boxes of command and strike throwing. And when I compared him to these other guys, like one, like he doesn't have the track record of injuries like Job does. Like Job has back issues. He had other issues that are a little bit worrisome. I love Job. Painter, like going back and reviewing his data, like, yeah, Painter's got good velocity, but his fastball shape's pretty bland and he gets no extension on it. We're talking about somebody that's pretty big, right? Andrew Painter's a big frame, but he gets no extension on it. I was a little bit surprised when I went back and looked at it and saw only 6'2" of extension for his size frame. He doesn't really have the stride length. It's just the extension's not there. And honestly, like, I thought about it and I went back and was like watching the video from the AFL that we had, and the fastball did get hit hard. It allowed a lot of fly balls, and I know the fly balls carry in the AFL, but then it was going back and looking at, okay, what did this look like before, like he got hurt? And it was more the same, where I kind of wonder if the fastball doesn't play as good as I thought it was going to play. Yeah, it's got the velo. It's still a good pitch, but that's kind of why I landed on Chandler at the top. Again, all three of these guys are in a tier, so I hope you hear me out on that and don't think I'm crazy for just putting Chandler at one. I really do think that, like, I wound up doing this exercise of having them all back to back to back in the same tier as overall ranking. So Chandler, Joe Painter, just from the standpoint of, like, I also think that Chandler's going to pitch significant innings in the majors this year. I dare say he pitches more than Andrew Painter does in the majors this year. Like, they've told us July, like, for Painter. It may be later. That was like the earliest. So I'm kind of thinking Chandler gets more innings than Painter, and I have a lot less worries about his health tracker than I do Jackson Jobe. And I love Jobe too. I think both guys are all three of these are very solid arms. Can't go wrong with any of them. But I do believe that Bubba Chandler has a chance to be special. Like, I don't know. That's kind of where I've landed after this last few days and kind of reevaluating and looking for this episode in particular.
Yeah, I have no issue with Chandler at number one. Like I said, you could put, you know, anyone in my top four, I would be fine with number one. You know, Chandler, Noah Schultz, Andrew Painter, or Jackson Jobe. And I think it's fairly easy to say that Chandler is the safest of them because, you know, Schultz, they haven't really kind of let him go yet, let him loose yet. So, you kind of got to wonder, you know, how is he going to handle, you know, more of a workload, you know, this year and beyond. You mentioned the injuries. Obviously, everyone knows the injury with Painter, you know, and Jobe having the back issues, which, as I mentioned with Evan Carter in the, you know, outfield dynasty episode last time, I'm always wary of back issues, though his don't seem to be, you know, as extreme as Carter's are, or especially like Mike Trout's. So hopefully, you know, that doesn't turn into a long-term thing with Jobe, because, you know, Jobe is absolutely dominant. Seeing him live was just a really fun player to scout. And your Bubba Chandler story kind of reminds me of a Ricky Tiedemann start I was at. I wasn't chirping him up to somebody, but it was like first inning was 1-2-3 with two strikeouts and like six whiffs, like really quick. And then like second, third inning, you're like, what the heck happened? He gave up like 7-8 hits total, 4-5 runs. Few walks, few wild pitches, like the wheels just came off in a hurry. So I think everyone's been one of those starts. Yeah, and I think that was the start I ended up seeing. Richard Fitz was on the other side when he was still with the Yankees, and he was really impressive. He went like 6 shutout with like 9 Ks or something like that, and he gave up a couple hits, a couple walks. So I was much more impressed by Fitz in that outing than with Ricky Tiedemann. But Yeah, Chandler, like I said, he's definitely a top-tier pitching prospect. I still land on Painter, and so I don't feel great about it, and I think I would say that about any one of the four. Like, I don't feel, like, strongly about having Painter at one. We haven't seen him in minor league game action in two seasons now. He missed, obviously, all of 2023 and 2024. You know, looked good out in Arizona, you know, just overall and at the start we were at. But, you know, he was shaking off the rust. So, you know, command wasn't quite as smooth as it was in the past. But, you know, before injury, looking at a guy that had really good command and control. He only had 25 walks in 2022 and 103 innings with a whopping 155 strikeouts. I mean, that's a little over six strikeouts per walk. That was as a 19-year-old that got up to Double-A, pitched at three levels that year. So I think it still kind of remains to be seen. Like, does he fully return to the pre-injury command and control level that he was at? It was kind of hard to judge that based off seeing, you know, one start of him live in the AFL and six starts total. I don't think we can really answer that question yet. But if he does, I think he's the best pitching prospect in the game. You know, the fastball you mentioned, you know, he's not lead extension, but I think the shape still plays fairly well. And if he's getting back up into like that mid to upper 90s sitting there, I think that's still like a plus offering. You know, and the secondaries with him are very good as well, you know, especially the slider, changeup. So, you know, mixing the curveball as well, which I think the curveball is actually above average as well. So I think he could have four above average or better pitches. And if he's back to being like plus command and control again, I mean, I think he's the number one pitching prospect in baseball. But, you know, Schultz has that upside as well. Obviously, Jackson Jobe is definitely up there too. That's really tough right now. But so I go Painter right now, and you're at Bubba Chandler. But let's get into the guy you kind of alluded to here a little bit, and that is Chase Dolander of the Colorado Rockies. You have him, or is it fourth overall, right between Painter and Schultz, and I have him at number nine overall. So, I mean, I think for me, I mean, I was super high on Dolander in the draft, too, coming out. And then, obviously, he went to the Rockies, which I think everyone groaned at. Which, you know, Rockies and Reds. You see a hitter land there? Great. See a pitcher land there? Oh, you know, you sigh a little bit. But I think if we just, like, took out, you know, team and, like, ballpark context and just, like, looked at talent alone, I'd have Dolander right up there as well. And as we've talked about, you know, various times on this podcast, I do think, you know, we both have said this, we do think that he can, you know, beat Coors to a degree or succeed at Coors. But what does succeeding at Coors look like? Is it, you know, it's probably still going to limit him to some degree, even if he is, you know, the best pitching prospect they've had in maybe, literally maybe forever. I don't know if they've ever developed a better pitching prospect than Chase Dolander. So that's kind of why I still have him at nine. I mean, he's still top 10 pitching prospect for me. I mean, he's absolutely phenomenal talent, and we saw him absolutely dominate last year in the minor leagues. Could see him up with the Rockies, you know, for a good chunk of this season as well. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised that he pitched 80 to 100 innings with the Rockies this year. I mean, who's really holding him back from that in that rotation? I mean, look at what he did last year. He had 23 starts, 9 in Double-A, 259 ERA, 118 innings, 259 ERA, 120 whip, 169 strikeouts to 47 walks. That is a 33.9% strikeout rate and a walk rate around 9.5%. So definitely talent is absolutely there. Proximity is there. I think he's a higher floor pitcher as well. But, man, I can't go top five on him personally, just, you know, with Coors Field looming that he'll make around half the starts at. So, but Chris, you have him top five, as I said, number four overall. So I don't think you're quite as worried about the Coors Field effect for him.
No. And, you know, I'm so sick of the arguments. Well, look what happened to John Gray. That's all I've gotten from people on social
media.
They're
very different guys.
Yeah, let's be honest. John Gray never struck out batters in college, and go look at his strikeout rates in the minors. They're not great.
Right.
Gray is a talented arm, but also John Gray was drafted high. that was it. Okay, the Rockies also have drafted a ton of pitchers high. Like, Gabriel Hughes was top 10. Like, there's a long list of guys they've drafted. Riley Pine. I don't really care about his draft slot. The pitch data, there's not anything remotely close when I'm comparing Chase Dolander and John Gray, just what we're looking at. So I think that Chase Dolander is the best pitcher that Coors is seen in my life, at least going back for a long time. Like, before I took baseball that seriously, you know? Like, I don't know. I can't think of the last pitcher. Like, John Gray obviously is, he was drafted, what, 10 years ago probably? Maybe before that? I don't remember.
I think it was even before that. I'm going to look it up.
Probably. I think he debuted in 2016. So, like, he was probably drafted before that. Yeah, look it up. But aside the point, so here's why I think that Chase Dolander will succeed in Coors. So, Coors is a known BABIP booster. Like, we know that. It's big gaps in the outfield. But look at the Rockies' outfield right now. It's actually really good. Like, they've got some guys that are going to cover some serious ground out there at every spot. I mean, we're talking guys that are going to track down balls that are going to benefit pitchers significantly. We also know that Coors Field is going to basically cause pitches to drop more. So, I've been trying to calculate, like, with Dolander's pitch data, like, what does the shape look like in Coors? So, like, this year, Dolander averaged, like, 16 inches of IBB, which you say, you may hear that raw number and be like, okay, like, that's not great. But Dolander had an incredible, like, one of the flattest four-seamers in the game. It was a negative 4 VAA, just a little bit flatter than Bubba Chandler's. He throws from a 5'5" release height. And if you've noticed something, the Rockies now are drafting a lot of lower slot pitchers, which I think is interesting. It's kind of like maybe they think they're going to like figure it out a little bit something here. And you may laugh, the Rockies figure out something, whatever. But what makes Dolander so unique is that I think his fastball does play. So sure, we're going to see the fastball drop. It's going to be, I think it's going to play with like 14.5 to 15 inches of vert at home. That's not great, but when you're factoring in his release point, when you're factoring in the VAA, and you're factoring in that he throws at 96-97, all of a sudden, I think it's a pretty good pitch. He threw his fastball 1,200 times last year. I understand it wasn't in Coors. He had a 21% swinging strike rate on it. Only four pitchers who threw their fastballs at least 500 times in the minors had a swinging strike rate that high. Every pitcher that had a higher swinging strike rate was a reliever, and they weren't remotely close in terms of total pitches. 1,200 total fastballs last year, 21% swinging strike rate. Fastball is elite. So, obviously, we've got that out of the way. I think the fastball will play in Coors. It's going to play exceptional away from Coors. The curveball, I mean, I think that it only helps that pitch, honestly. And you say, okay, well, what about location? Here's the problem with Coors, I'd say. With the movement aspects, pitchers just aren't really sure where to aim. Like, I think that's the biggest thing is like, okay, where am I aiming this pitch? Because I don't know where it's actually going to land, just given the difference in movement. So Dolander is interesting in the sense of like, he, if you've heard him talk about pitching, he actually is like, I'm just kind of a guy that throws it down the middle and lets it do its thing. And maybe that sounds absurd, but I think that from a little bit of that standpoint, it can work. He's obviously going to have to aim a little bit higher, I think, with the fastball. Like, he may have to aim the fastball, like, above the zone, and it winds up, like, at the top of the zone. Aside the point, the curveball is going to play well with the drop. It's a beautiful two-plane type pitch. Good drop on it, good depth. High spin rate, sits upper 70s. He throws a slider cutter as well in the 88 range, which, you know, it can touch 90. I don't think that pitch, I actually think that pitch will play exceptionally well in Coors. Like, I've been trying to break down, like, what will this look like, and I think that it's going to be a solid pitch. He doesn't throw his changeup all that often. It's going to kill the horizontal on his changeup, probably like 4 to 5 inches. He doesn't throw it enough for it to matter, but when he has thrown it, like up to 20 inches of fade. So if he does further evolve that pitch, like, okay, now we're looking at it being 20 inches of fade all the way down to like, if it's 15 to 14, whatever. He doesn't throw enough for it to matter. But I do think that you look at the kind of movement profiles that can work in Coors. You look at the kind of arm slots that can work in Coors, and you look at the fastball, how good it is, and I think it works. I think Dolander is going to beat Coors Field. Now, what does that look like? I think that Dolander's great seasons may be a 3.4 to 3.5 ERA. I mean, shoot, we saw Herman Marquez have sub-3 ERAs before. So I would not be shocked if Dolander put up seasons like that. I mean, just being honest, I think that Dolander is good enough to have that kind of season because the talent level is there. The arm talent is there. The arsenal is there. Dolander is a special arm. And I think that, honestly, it's a bit overblown, the Coors effect on him. And yes, it's an effect, 100% going to matter. I'm telling you, when you factor in what he does, you factor in that that young outfield is athletic and rangy and going to cover some serious ground. They may have the best center fielder in the game in Brenton Doyle out there, and they've got two guys on the corner that can cover some serious ground too. Nolan Jones can move. They're going to have Jordan Beck out there that can move. Sam Hilliard, crazy enough, is good in the field. I think that it's going to help those pitchers run lower BABIPs than we're used to from Colorado arms at home. So all that to say, like, I think Dolander also pitches 100-plus in the majors, like you said. They actually have talked about they will give him a chance to win a spot out of spring training. So it's a real possibility. I'm not saying it's likely, but I'd bank on 100 innings, if not more. And I think that Chase Dolander's elite.
Yeah, no, he's definitely elite. So you're thinking, what, like Herman Marquez with more strikeouts, kind of where you're at?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he could miss. I think he could put up 30% K rate seasons, no doubt in my mind. Because, like, look at the correlation between John Gray's minors and the majors. Like, I mean, Dolander struck out, what, 35% of batters last year?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to take a hit, obviously, because it's major league hitting, and it's going to be a different effect at Coors, but I think he's going to have 30% K rate seasons, personally.
And speaking of Gray, so I looked about Gray was the 2013 class, number 3 overall. That was the Mark Appel, Chris Bryant class.
Wow.
And then for minor leagues, he had 322 strikeouts and 312 and two-thirds. That equates out to, 1.315, there we go, a 24.5% K rate from Gray in the minors.
That's my point. He had one his senior year. His draft year of college was the only year I think he was over 30% on like a full season of in like that. So like that's a major difference in swing and miss stuff.
Yeah, his senior year at Oklahoma, yeah, he was 30.6%. Trying to see any other year he was even close to that. 2014, nah, he was 22%.
Yeah.
2015. Damn, about the same as the 2014, 26, two minor league starts. Yeah, he was never, I don't think he's ever had a season over like, it's one year in the majors, he was over 25%, looks like. 2016, every other year, he's been kind of like a 21 to 24%. That's where he's kind of lived for the most part. So yeah, definitely a lot more swing and miss potential there with Chase Dolander. So I think he would be a very strong case for number one if he was just like in any other system. But I think he gets knocked even more than we have him ranked, especially even more than I have him ranked. Now, I wonder if we put up a poll that was simply, do you consider Chase Dolander a top 10 pitching prospect for fantasy? What do you think the split would end up being on that, Chris?
Probably like 30-70, yes, no.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to post that here in a second. So I think this would be
it before we drop the episode.
Yeah, I'm gonna do it right here on the air. Do you consider Chase Dolander to be a top 10 pitching prospect for fantasy? Just gotta make sure I do that from the right account here. But yeah, I think it's gonna be like I was thinking like 60-40. No, but
yeah, maybe.
We'll see what that ends up being. I'm going to pop that out here in a second. But moving on here, going over to Quinn Matthews here, one of the biggest breakouts of the 2024 season. I mean, maybe one of the top two or three biggest breakouts. There was a lot of pitching prospect breakouts. And Quinn Matthews was one that I was a little bit slower to kind of get on board with, at least to this extent where I have him as a top 10 pitching prospect now. I was like, he was a little bit older. 23, dominating, low A, high A. I'm like, all right, that's cute. But he had the velo jump, and then that velo jump stuck throughout the year, and he continued dominating. He had a bad, few starts with AAA Memphis, but I don't really put a ton of stock into that. So overall, Quinn Matthews, 2.76 ERA and 0.98 whip in 143 and a third innings. Again, that was across four different levels. And he had a minor league leading 202 strikeouts to 49 walks. That is a 35.5% strikeout rate. I mean, I think the question now is he the new top pitching prospect in the St. Louis system? Has he overtaken Tink Hentz? I think that's a pretty good debate at this point in time. But just in general, with Quinn Matthews, Chris, you know, how much are you buying the 2024 breakout from him?
Yeah, I think it's legit. I mean, he's just a different pitcher than he was. I mean, I want to shout out Beck because Beck saw him in spring breakout and literally wrote a piece about Matthews and the breakout potential, and that was in March. And good call, Beck, because, you know, I mean, obviously the fastball ticked up. Like, you got to see that on display in the spring breakout, and it stuck all year. Early in the year, I was like, is it going to stick? Is it going to sit at 95?
Right.
He said 91 at Stanford. Yeah, he did. And I think that the arsenal is good enough to play. The command's good. He's a workhorse type frame. So, yeah, I'm not going to talk as long about Matthews. I've ranted about the other guys. But simply put, I buy into Quinn Matthews. And
yeah.
I believe him. I've got him much above Tink Hentz, I'll say that.
Yeah, I do too. I think he's – see, you could say that the upside is similar on those two, but I don't feel nearly as safe about – even with Matthews being the more recent breakout and, you know, Tink's been around, you know, a little bit as a, you know, top pitching prospect, I feel a lot safer about Matthews kind of reaching his potential than Tink Hentz. So I still wonder if Tink Hentz is even a starter long term. So, yeah, I have Matthews ahead of Hentz now. I mean, the fastball is now, you know, an above average or better fastball. He's got a really good changeup, you know, solid command and control, has a good breaker as well with that slider. So, yeah, I think he's going to be, maybe he's not going to be a frontline guy, but he'd be like a back end two, high end three type of guy long term. Yeah, I definitely think he's there, has that level of upside, and he's probably going to pitch a good amount of innings for St. Louis this year as well. I think he could be kind of similarly to Dolander, you know, 80, 100 innings, something like that. So yeah, definitely. If I see a 1-10, I'd say I'm like 8.5 buying the breakout here of Quinn Matthews this past year. One more guy here in this top 10 that we want to talk about, and that is Travis Sikora, who, you know, didn't have as many innings as all these other breakouts did this year, but he was absolutely dominant on the mound this year. You know, only had, let's see, it was 85 innings and 20 starts, but a 2.33 ERA, 0.91 whip, and 129 strikeouts to 27 walks in those 85 innings. So that's a 39.2% strikeout rate and a 30, wait, that's not right. I got two more math here. There we go. 31% K-minus walk rate, which is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, I think he has number one pitching prospect upside. I mean, look at the stuff. He has that starter's frame. He's already 6'6", like 230, 235. You know, he has, you know, elite, you know, pitch mix here. I mean, I think he's I like a lot of arms in this national system. I'm very high on Yarlene Susanna as well. I think Cade Cavalli could still turn into something long term if he ever just gets back on the mound. But Sikora, I like more than any other pitching prospect in the system, and more than most. I'm like number five overall right now. This elite fastball, good feel for slider and changeup as well. I mean, you see he can miss bats at an absolutely, like, ridiculously elite clip, and he's showing, you know, a good feel for command of his pitches as well. I think he's very advanced for his age. I mean, I'm 100%. If I was like 80 or 85% buying the breakout of Matthews, like, I'm 100% all in on Sikora. I think the sky's the limit with him. So I would even look to buy now, buy high. So I think that value is only going to rise in 2025.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, he put up one of the best starts I saw all year. Just being honest, like, his start that I saw was absolutely incredible. You know, Sikora had a lot of pedigree coming out of the draft, and he just built on it. He got better all year. He built up. I thought he was incredible. And you look at the two postseason starts that won't show up in his stat sheet, and they
That's
were
true,
absurd.
Yeah.
I think he had 10 innings, both starts were scoreless. And I think he had 22 strikeouts in those two starts, those 10 total innings, which is nuts. But yeah, I actually think the fastball is his worst pitch of the bunch, and the fastball is good. So like, that's pretty interesting. Yeah, I think people have, somebody was questioning that, but like the fastball is good velocity wise. It's mid 90s, still touch 99. But honestly, like, I think that you look at the other pitches that he brings to the table, and the slider is really impressive. The splitter's nasty. I think the splitter is one of the best pitches that, you know, of his, I think. It's that 82 to 85 slider in the 81 to 84 range when I saw him, at least. But, you know, I think that the splitter, that you showed the results. The slider and the splitter both had whiff rates north of 50% last year for Sakura, which is incredibly high. I mean, the fastball, pretty impressive itself at 34%. So those things you like to see. Honestly, like, if you squint, the mechanics are very similar to Paul Skeens if you watch him. It's like he almost tries to mimic what Paul Skeens does from a mechanical standpoint. I think that Sakura's really good. I mean, obviously, he fits in here at the top for me. In this grouping, I had him ninth, but, you know, I think he could easily jump substantially, you know, especially after some graduation. So he's firmly a top 10 pitching prospect, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely is. I mean, Travis Sakura is an absolute beast on the mound. All right, let's move on to 11 through 20. But before we do, quick recap. Top 10, Chris Hadd, Bubba Chandler, Jackson Jobe, Andrew Painter, Chase Dolander, Noah Schultz, Quinn Matthews, Thomas White, Kumar Rocker, Travis Sakura, and Brandon Sproat. I had Andrew Painter, Jackson Jobe, Noah Schultz, Bubba Chandler, Travis Sakura, Alejandro Rosario, Kumar Rocker, Quinn Matthews, Chase Dolander, and Cade Horton at number 10.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
11 through 20 from me is Sebi Matthews, Chase Burns, Tink Hentz, Brandon Sproat, Thomas White, Yarlene Susanna, Rhett Lauder, Jacob Mizierowski, Hagen Smith, and Santiago Suarez. Chris, who you got 11 through 20?
All right. So at 11, I have Alejandro Rosario, Chase Burns, Hagen Smith, Red Lauder, and Yarlene Susanna. And then 16 through 20, you got Caden Dana, Ricky Tiedemann, Thomas Harrington, Tink Hentz, and Jonah Tong.
All right. Let's start with the guy that I noticed you don't have in your top 20, who I still have top 10. I think he's become a very hard pitching prospect to rank right now. That's Cade Horton of the Chicago Cubs, who had some injuries last year. I think it was the lat, if I recall correctly. Maybe there was another one, I can't remember. But had a kind of a down year, limited year as well, after having a big 2023 that vaulted him. I mean, he was being talked about as a top five pitching prospect, or even top three pitching prospect by some, entering 2024, but was limited to just 9 starts, 4 with Double-A Tennessee, 5 with Triple-A Iowa. He was actually good in those 4 starts with Double-A Tennessee, but struggled in the 5 starts with Iowa. So overall, it was a 4.46 ERA and 1.25 WHIP in 34 and a third innings, but still had 40 strikeouts to 13 walks. But his perceived value and ranking have dipped a bit here. It's just a matter of how much. Obviously, with you, Chris, it's a bit more than I have dropped him down my rankings heading into 2025. So what are you expecting from Cade Horton right now? Are you looking to buy low, or are you kind of fading him at this point?
Well, I'm fading him based on my ranking. Like, Horton has some major concerns. And, you know, I think that I'm not going to say we got like duped, because I think Horton's arm talent is really good. You know, like, we saw the arm talent his last year at Oklahoma in the College World Series, where he was absolutely exceptional. And then his pro debut in 2023, he was pretty good too. I mean, the results all that season were good. But I think that at this point, it's honestly just his health. Is his shoulder going to be okay? Like, I've heard some mixed things on the shoulder, and that's a little worrisome. I mean, the last I heard, like, he was still trying to see if he could resume a throwing program, which, or like start back being cleared to throw. And that's a little bit concerning to me, especially when you're coming off of 34 innings last season. I don't know. I still believe in Horton. I still believe in the arm talent, at least. But I mean, I think if you look at it, it's like, oh man, like, who is Cade Horton, I guess? And like, is he going to be healthy enough to ever reach that potential? And I'm not really sure if we ever see him get to the level that we all hope, just given the fact that he hasn't been able to stay on the mound and handle a starter's workload for most of his career.
Yeah, I have always had a hard time ranking Chase Dillinger. I mean, coming out of the draft, I was definitely lower on him than most, and that bit me, because he kind of proved why he was taken at the, what was it, number 7-8 overall pick, I believe it was, in the 2023 draft. I mean, I was questioning just the smaller track record. I had definitely did not have him top 10 in FYPD. Actually, I want to see where I had him in, let's see, 2023 FYPD, my massive spreadsheet here. I had Cade Horton. Where do I don't even know. I don't even see him here. Oh, right here. Item 19. Yeah, I definitely did not have Cade Horton high in my rankings. So I was definitely lower on him the most. And again, that came back to bite me. But I was really buying him last year. He looked really good. I mean, two years ago, I should say, when he looked really good in 2023. And I moved him way up. Yeah, I feel, like you said, Chris, a little duped as well. Because, oh, sorry, it was 2022 draft, not 2023 draft, sorry. Felt a little duped as well, because now I'm like, am I too high in him now? Is he going to bounce back? I mean, I feel like both of our rankings, where one of them's going to look bad at this point. Either he's going to be, you know, another kind of hurt year, or he's similar to 2022 or 2024, excuse me, very inconsistent in several regards, or he's going to bounce back to being an elite pitching prospect. I think both are possible. It's kind of hard to predict right now, but I think, as we've said about other prospects, I think it's a show-me year for Cade Horton. Not a make-or-break year, but definitely a show-me year, because he's 23 right now. He's going to be, you know, 24 before the end of next season. He's not like a 20-year-old pitching prospect. And yeah, he has to answer a lot of questions this year. The upside's there. We both have said that. But can he stay healthy? I think that's going to really determine if he's going to be bounced back to being like a top, you know, top two-tier pitching prospect, or if he's someone that's going to slide further down rankings. And if he doesn't, if he's kind of slowly getting hurt entering the season, and, you know, he's going to start dropping on my rankings a lot more. That is for sure. I also find it funny that Baseball Reference has his positions at starting pitcher, third baseman, and shortstop. That is actually, did he play third base and shortstop in college? He did.
He played short, yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know if he played third, but I know he played short.
Yeah,
he's also a quarterback. He played quarterback. So
big athlete there. Yes, he played 4 games at short and 35 at third. I don't remember him playing third base at all, but yeah, Cade Horton, definitely a very polarizing prospect here entering 2025. Next name on the list. Well, actually, we'll get to those guys later on. But next name on the list is Jacob Mizierowski, who's another one where I don't know where I want to rank him. I've been kind of lower on him lately. I've been fading to a degree, but certainly not out. I mean, we see the stuff with Mizierowski. I mean, it's a plethora of plus pitches, but command and control just are not there. He can strike out batters with the best of them. We've seen that. But last year had 60 walks in 97 and a third innings. He started getting moved to the bullpen. He had 14 appearances total with AAA Nashville, 12 of which were out of the bullpen. And he was still walking guys at a high clip, 10 walks in 17 and two-thirds innings. So that's still a big issue for him. It's something that got even worse last year than it was in 2023. So, Chris, I guess, are you still in on Mizierowski to some degree? Do you think this bullpen move is going to be permanent? But at the same time, I think, you know, even if it is permanent, which I kind of do lean that way, he could be a really good late-inning reliever too. So there's still a path to success here with Mizierowski.
Yeah, I mean, in a report that was in December, it was basically a question of like how would like Jacob Mizierowski be used, and the report was he would not be stretched out. So I think that he probably sticks in the bullpen. I think that's his best fit. I think the arm talent is a lot of fun with Jacob Mizorowski. Yeah, I mean, got the electric fastball. It's going to play even better in a short stint. The command comes and goes, which I think is probably better suited out of a bullpen role. And I think that's probably where Mizorowski does go and land long term. Yeah, I'll be curious if they try to build him up. I would say that's not likely the case based on what I've seen and read. So I think he sticks in the pen. I think he's going to be a pretty good bullpen piece.
I mean, if they can figure out his command and control to some degree, same with like a DL Hall, like that could be a nasty, you know, lefty righty duo right there long term. I mean, and they still got Trevor McGill. You know, he's going to be the closer for now, and he's been, you know, a very good arm as well. But if they can somehow make that Hall-Mizorowski duo into, let's say, a lockdown late-inning 8-9 combination there, that'd be really fun. That's a good bullpen. You know, Nick Mears has some breakout potential as well. He's pretty nasty. So Milwaukee's got some arms in there. Yeah, I think Mizorowski more so bullpen. I mean, is there any two guys that could be bullpen arms? It'd be like him and, you know, Emiliano Teodo, who we aren't talking about here, but both of those guys could be just real electric, you know, eighth, ninth inning guys that could still provide some solid fantasy value in that regard. So I guess if you have Mizorowski and someone wants to give you a top 100 price tag on him for in return, I'd take it. I have him just outside my top 100 right now, but that's more so because I think he's a reliever long term. So I guess I would sell if you can get a good price for him, but if not, I'm fine holding him and seeing if he can turn into that lead inning guy. I'm fine with that as well. Next guy here, we'll keep it in the National League Central. Guy that's a little smaller than Mizorowski. Go with Tink Hentz of the St. Louis Cardinals. Someone that I feel like should be older than 22 years old, but he'll be 22 for most of the 2025 season. 2020 second round pick, who's had a, you know, a decent minor league career. It has not been bad by any means, but kind of questionings with him, how much, you know, how many innings can he get long term? Is there some reliever risk here as well? I mean, I don't think it's nearly the same level as it is with Mizorowski and Emiliano Teodo, but definitely I think there's a concern there. Last year had 20 starts, 2.71 ERA, 1.07 WHIP, 109 strikeouts, 26 walks in 79 and two thirds innings. So again, good season with him in AA. You know, probably starts in AAA after making 32 total starts in AA between 2023 and 2024. So Chris, you know, long term, where are you at on Tink Hentz? I mean, we both still have him as top 20. I have him 13. You have him 19. But what do you think, you know, long term Tink Hentz looks like for fantasy?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. I think that the Cardinals have babied Tink Hentz. Like, look at his usage kind of month by month. And obviously, he dealt with some injuries last year. And he left his final start of the year injured as well. I was told back, which, again, concerning. But look at how they babied him when he came back. And I don't know. I feel like they've kind of babied him his whole career outside of a stretch this May where they let him go six innings, three straight starts. And I think at that point, people were kind of like, okay, like here he comes. Like it's going to, you know, he's going to all come together. They're going to let him go and be a starter. But I do have serious concerns about Tink Hentz's ability to handle a full season starter workload. I mean, he's a smaller, thinner guy. We've seen that kind of frame be hurt more consistently. I don't think it's an arm talent issue. I mean, it's an interesting arsenal too, where like I like his pitch mix. The changeup oddly is kind of dead zone. Like it has a lot of carry to it. It's a weird changeup where it actually is a good pitch, but it's like uber similar to fastball metrics. It's like 15 inches of IBB and 15 inches of fade, which is weird for a changeup. Like you watch it and it's like, okay, like it looks pretty good, but the pitch metrics on it are strange. But aside the point, like, you know, I think that Tink has to prove in 2025 that he can handle a starter's workload all season. You're right. He's still young. He will be 22 for nearly all year. But at this point, I mean, he's been rather babied, especially considering he spent all 2023 in AA as well. And I know that he missed time there hurt as well, but I don't know. I'm just kind of like, I don't know with Hentz. And actually, you know, he split time in 2023. I misspoke. He split time between high and AA, but then he returned to AA in 2024 where he you know, was the whole year. And he, I know he missed some time. He left his last start hurt. And the surface numbers are good with Tinkins, but I don't know. Like, I'm just a bit worried about the durability.
Yeah, I think he could be like a per inning basis or even like a per start basis. I think he could still be a valuable arm. It's just, is that, you know, what, like 20 starts a year? Can he make 30 starts a year? Can he make, you know, pitch 150 plus innings a year? I think that's still the question mark. Like I said, the talent's still there, which is why we both still have him top 20 for sure. And he can miss bats. You know, command and control has been pretty solid as well. I mean, you saw him even improve the walk rate this past year and increase strikeout rate a good amount. So big jump in the K rate. It was below 25% to above 30%. So nice jump there. Still young. So there's still a lot of talent, but yeah, definitely has just some concerns about what the workload looks like long term. And also has, you know, one of my favorite actual first names. It kind of reminds me of, you know, back in the day for the Red Sox, Coco Crisp. First name was actually Covelli. Tinkhats' first name is Markievicz, which is a really strong name. I get why he goes by Tink, but Markievicz like a sneaky good name. I like that name. I wonder if Tink was a nickname, though. It doesn't show his middle name. I don't know if Tink's his middle name or if Tink was like a nickname as a kid. I don't know. Someone probably knows out there. If someone does know that story, please tweet at us at Toolshed Pod. So I'd love to know. Or I could probably Google it. I'll probably find it. But all right, closing out the show here in part one of our pitching prospect discussion. I want to look ahead a little bit to the future. And we do the bigger, you know, prospect crystal ball, dynasty crystal ball episodes later in the spring. But just wanted to close out with kind of this little segment of who do we think could be the number one pitching prospect in baseball 1 year from today. I mean, we've probably already talked about most of these guys in the show, but just want to give like our quick picks here. So for me, and I tweeted this out, you know, on Sunday night before we started recording. Yeah, I think it's probably, if I'd pick like the two front runners, it's probably Noah Schultz and Travis Sekora. So I think, you know, all those other names at the top will graduate. You know, Painter will graduate or probably graduate. Now I'm starting to question it. Jobe should, you know, Chandler should. So I think that leaves even, you know, Chase Dolander should as well. So for me, I would say Sekora or Noah Schultz. I mean, I want fully ruled out Alejandro Rosario. I love him a lot as well. And then maybe a Chase Burns, if he has a big year, could get up in that mix as well. But those are my top two. Chris, did you have any different names there that could be number one in 2026?
I mean, I would probably be surprised if Schultz graduates. I mean, I know everybody thinks he's going to be up midseason. I'm not totally sure that's the case. I think
Agreed, he gets a
cup of coffee in the last month, which means he probably doesn't graduate. So by default, I think that he would then be the top pitching prospect in baseball. If I'm looking at like a wild card that could make a jump, I mean, like going out on a limb on somebody we might talk about in the next episode, like if all click for Brody Hopkins, like he could vault. I mean, he's just a pretty absurd arsenal and unique kind of profiles. So, like I wouldn't rule that one out. So that would be like an off the wall type that could really take a jump, but yeah, we'll see. I think the default would be Noah Schultz, and then after that, you know, it'd be Sekora or Rosario, most likely.
All right, that is going to wrap us up for part one of this pitching prospect rankings. We will be back with you on Wednesday for part two, where we're going 21 through 50. But until then, everyone take care.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.